the commissioner of the NBA, David Stern, back with us on Mike and Mike. How are you, Commissioner?
Boy, those are the two best days of basketball.
They certainly are.
Absolutely.
We're looking forward to it. Folks here are certainly looking forward to it. We'll start looking ahead to the playoffs with you in a moment. But first, we were both interested in the comment you made the other day. A lot of conversation, of course, about at the end of the year, healthy players resting, particularly LeBron James. And you used the words a bit troubled by it. Mike and I kicked it around a little bit. What really, if anything, could you do about it if you were to do something about it?
Well, you know, you can persuade, talk, do lots of stuff, and we've discussed it a lot over the years in the office. And honestly, it's a very difficult subject because I don't want to force the teams to start saying, oh, they have he has an injured pinky, so I'm going to wind up considering sending medical staff to check out a pinky of a player. So we're going to talk about what the right thing is at the Board of Governors meeting today. And, I'm not unaware that this was a very big issue at the close of the NFL season. And I was watching that with interest because it's a similar issue. And I know they didn't do anything. And maybe we won't do anything, but I do want to talk to my owners about it, so I don't want to give any opinions before I have a chance to talk to the teams today.
Another issue, and this is off the court, off the field, whatever sport you're talking about, and that has to do with social media. We saw, and not so much with Ben Roethlisberger, what with Jerry Jones getting caught on the camera phone and such. What does the NBA do to kind of talk to players, inform them about the dangers of the new social media that is out there now?
Well, you know, what we've done two things. Number one, we obviously there are certain times that they should be on the social media and certain times they shouldn't. That's around the game. And everything else we say, hey, it's just like you're in front of a television camera. And you have to respond accordingly, and you will be held responsible for that. So we have had, you know, and we're in touch with our players constantly. We obviously, believe it or not, we read all their tweets and occasionally remind them that what there was a lapse. You really don't want to be doing that. And invariably, they agree with us. No coercion. They just somehow forget, as many people do, that when you tweet, it isn't like you're talking to your friends, you're talking to the world, and you want to watch your conduct because people may misconstrue what you say, or you may just do something dumb and it's not a good idea.
It's just amazing to me. Commissioners of these major sports, I still can't get used to the word tweeting on their Twitters and talking about that.
And yet that's the world we're all living in.
Get with the program. That's, it's our new world, and not only that, we actually, you know, are now at a place where we say with some pride that if you added up all of our followers on Twitter, you'd get, including our players, you'd probably get to something in excess of 10 million, and not unlike that on Facebook, and YouTube is totally off the charts with respect to the videos of NBA action. So that's pretty exciting in some way, and that's really part of where the world is migrating.
Mike David Stern, the commissioner of the NBA. Of course, now the playoffs begin for the 16 teams we're in, and for many others, they turn their attention to what will be a huge summer, Commissioner. Your league is going to get a lot of attention with the very high-profile free agents, most notably LeBron James, but we all know who some of the other names are. What, if any, will your role be in facilitating how this summer plays out?
Gee, I'm planning to watch this great playoff and then get ready for the draft. I have no other role other than as a fan watching what our teams begin doing on July 1.
Fair enough. And so then let's get to the playoffs here. New blood in this postseason. The Charlotte Bobcats making it for the first time in their history. Oklahoma City with the young superstar and Kevin Durant getting in. It does feel as though it's a time while you have the established powers of some new blood making its way into the NBA postseason. How does that work for you?
You know, it works very well for me. You know, we said before the season we expect to see some new and interesting things going on in our league together with the great stars. And sort of it's happened both ways. Our rookies and our young players are fueling their team's march into the playoffs. Look what Brandon Jennings did look what a maturing Kevin Durant is doing, but also look what Jason Kidd and Steve Nash are doing. So it's happening at both ends of the spectrum. I'm looking forward to catching the first playoff game ever in Oklahoma City. I'm looking forward to being in Charlotte for the first playoff game in Charlotte. And really, this augurs very well for, you know, for the development of the fan base in those cities as well. And wow. And we have, you know, 50 win teams in the, you know, we have 850 win teams. I mean, we've had a number of teams that had very, very good seasons.
And continue on the new blood, but I guess it would actually be old blood in a new situation. You know, Michael Jordan, now an owner, you know, and his team in the playoffs for the first time. What do you perceive as his greatest strengths that will be as an owner?
Well, first of all, if you want to have some fun and do a double take, you come to an NBA meeting.
Yeah.
And as we were last night and yesterday, and there's, you know, look around the table, there's Michael, you know, it's kind of interesting. He's bringing his competitive spirit and his enthusiasm and his really desire to win, not just on the court, but on the business field. So we're expecting a couple of sellouts in Charlotte for the playoffs. We're expecting, renewed interest in tickets, sponsorship, suites, club seats, and an entire, you know, rejuvenation of the, you know, business aura around that franchise to go with their new success on the court. So I think we're really listing Charlotte as already improved economically going into next season, but, you know, sort of enjoying the pressure that Michael's putting on himself to demonstrate that this club will be a community asset and make the people of Charlotte proud.
And do the other owners ask to get pictures taken with him?
No, but but it's it's covered by the commissioner owner privilege. But it's fun having him in there and having some fun with him. You know, he was
final thought.
The last time some of the owners saw him when he was speaking out in collective bargaining, you know, over a decade ago. So
final thought for you, Commissioner.
Kind of,
yeah.
It's kind of fun.
We have just 1 minute. I'm sorry I keep interrupting. We're on. There's a tiny bit of a delay as we're down here in Dallas. Phil Jackson fined $35,000 for comments about the refs. Mike and I chuckling because it sounds to us like Phil is doing what he does best, which is trying to get inside the head of the young opponent he's going up against in Kevin Durant. What did you make of that whole situation?
Well, it's good for the petty cash fund of the office. So, you know, we really do want to, you know, have to keep it up. I think it's sort of all part of the playoff, and it's a little silly, but if he wants to support charities, that's, you know, he'll keep supporting it, although his contributions will continue to increase.
I mentioned ABC tomorrow for Chicago, Cleveland, ABC Sunday, Oklahoma City, and the Lakers. ESPN Radio, by the way, will have Miami, Boston tomorrow night, and the Thunder-Laker game on Sunday. Commissioner, best of luck as the whole thing gets started. We'll catch up with you down the road.
Guys, thanks for being interested. See you on the road.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
From the Miami Heat, here's Dwayne Wade back with us on Mike and Mike in the Morning. How are you, Dwayne?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
I apologize. I don't know if you can hear the booing behind us. We are we're outside Dallas this morning, and of course, your championship 4 years ago cost these fans a title. I'm sure they mean it with respect. Actually, you know what, Dwayne?
Yeah, I'm sure they don't. Who are you kidding?
But it's an interesting question that you can answer. You know, we were sitting here talking about how much of a difference it makes to a player and that player's standing to have a championship ring. You won the ring 4 years ago, Dwayne Wade. You were a great player before that and a great player after. How much difference in your own mind does it make for your career that you have a championship ring?
Well, I mean, first of all, I apologize to the Dallas Mavericks fans, but I don't as well. But it does make a big difference. I mean, first of all, you know, you play this game to win championships. I've been very fortunate in my career where I'm able to have that early. So that elusiveness of chasing a championship down my whole career won't be there. It's just trying to continue to get back there, continue trying to be a winner. So, you know, some of the things that some of the great players never got, I've been fortunate enough to get it now. I just want more. So kind of like you being greedy. in a sense. But, you know, once you get there and once you feel it, I think you probably want it even more than you did before you even felt it.
And if you don't get it, and you did, and it's tough for you to get in the heads of players, great players who did not get it, do you think they feel there's a hole in their career because they didn't get that ring?
No question about it. No question about it. There's so many great players that, you know, that feel that way. And of course, and it is. It kind of is. You know, and they don't take away from their individual performance and the things they did. And they don't take away from the teams they had. You know, a lot of guys, you know, just was in the wrong era and at the wrong time. You know, Webb was in Bill Russell era, wrong time. You know, he was in Michael Jordan era, wrong time. And it's just that. So, hopefully we don't have the era. Hopefully LeBron don't get in, and once he get in, he don't get out kind of era. But that'll suck for a lot of guys if that happens.
Well, here's Dwayne Wade, who's got one championship ring and is hoping to get more. He was the finals MVP in 2006, won a gold medal at the Olympics just a few years ago, and now back in the playoffs with Miami. We know that the president of your team, Pat Riley, sent a message to the Miami Heat fans, sending out a note saying the team will do everything it can to keep you. I know you have a very big summer ahead of you, but a playoff, you know, situation to worry about before then. How much has your pending free agency been on your mind through this season, and how much is it a factor right now?
Well, you know what? It's really not a factor, you know, to me. You know, my situation is kind of simple. You know, of course, there's a lot of things said, you know, especially with myself, LeBron, and Chris Bosh. But, you know, Miami know where I stand. We do a lot of communication with myself, Coach Riley, and Mickey Harrison. Right now, I'm focusing on what I can do to help this team, you know, try to, you know, be the underdogs and try to, you know, do something great, you know, that we haven't done around here in a couple of years, and let's continue to compete and move on to the next round. The summer is the summer. You know, we all know what that's about. It's exciting for fans. It's exciting for the game of basketball, but it's a big decision in a lot of our lives, and that decision will come, you know, with time. So I'm not worried about it. I don't think Miami's worried about it neither. They know and understand what I want, and I'm happy here, and, you know, hopefully we try to make everything work.
And certainly when you look at it, a big decision, we all wish we had big decisions like this. So who's going to pay us tens of millions of dollars to play some basketball? It's a beautiful thing. But you, as you mentioned, you know, you're getting ready for the playoffs, getting ready for Boston. You swept them, you were swept by Boston in the regular season. You know, here's a team that a lot of people saw, you know, because of their age, kind of hanging back a little bit, looking to turn the switch on in the playoffs. Do you see this team being able to do that with some of the age on that team?
Well, you know what? First of all, you know, reading a quote of what Rondo said yesterday, if a team wins 50 games in a year, they all happy with that. And it's talked about, like, you know, hang it up for them, and they won 50 games this year, and not even playing great in the last 2 months of the season. So, you know, this is a team that's very, very capable, and you can never deny the heart of a champion, of course. The biggest pullback, you know, the Houston Rockets. You cannot do that. And right now, you know what? This team is still the fourth seed. They still have home court advantage. We're the underdogs coming in there. So we haven't found a way to beat them yet. We found a way to be close in games. We haven't found a way to win those games. So we have a tough task ahead of us. But at the same time, this is what you play this game for. You play this game for challenges, and this is going to be a big challenge for us, but we're going to enjoy it.
We had Doc Rivers, the coach of the Celtics, on with us yesterday, Mike and Mike, here with Dwayne Wade now. And we asked him about you, and he said, yeah, I have a lot of respect for Dwayne Wade. He's definitely the second best player ever to come out of Marquette. What do you think?
That's hilarious. I have a lot of respect for that. I have a lot of respect for
feeling on that.
Our relationship goes way back to my first year at Marquette when he used to come up, when he actually was coaching Orlando Magic. He used to come up at our practices and give us some of his knowledge and take over some time. And our relationship has been going on since. Just one of the coaches I respect so much, not only as what he's done in basketball, but the person that he is, you know, off the court. I've been knowing his kids since they were young as well. So it's a family. You know, Marquette family sticks together. Unfortunately, he decided to say that comment about me being the second best player. But you know what? I take it.
You know, Dwayne, let's go off the court for a minute. We had David Stern on a little earlier, and it was, again, pretty odd to hear a 67-year-old man who's been around the game a long time talk about people tweeting on their Twitter accounts. We had Shaq on, and we know he's into all the latest social media things, and we know you are into that as well. You know, with the situation that happened here in Dallas with Jerry Jones being out at a bar and a camera phone recording some things he said, How aware of you are you of that when you go out, and does it affect how you are when you are out nowadays?
Well, you know what, Mike, it does affect, you know, a lot of things you do. So you always got to be aware because, you know, camera phones, everybody can whip them out in a heartbeat. So it's very unfortunate that, you know, the world has gotten to the place where everything that you do or say can be put out to the world in 0.2 seconds. But you know what? You have to make adjustments to the world. And no one is going to be perfect. You know, we're going to make mistakes. So you can't hide from where the world is. Social media is a very big part of the world. You either get with the times or you get out of the times. So you can't hide away from it. You just got to try to make adjustments to, you know, certain things. But you know what? You're human as well. You're going to make mistakes. We're all imperfect. And, you know, once people all understand that, we'll be better off.
Well said. Yeah, Mike and Mike and Dwayne Wade, the Miami Heat. Quickly, before we let you go, I covered sports in Chicago for 11 years. I'm inundated right now with messages. Tell Dwayne Wade to come home. Tell Dwayne Wade to come home. Tell him to come back home to Chicago. How many times a day do you hear that from your friends and family back in Chicago?
Well, of course, I hear it a lot, especially in the summertime. Just, I get bombarded with it, you know, in Chicago. So, first of all, you know, it's an honor, you know, for people to even, you know, want you that way. To ever be wanted, you know how that feel when you're wanted. It's like when you're young and in school and, you know, you find out that girl wants you. You know, that the girl that you've been having a crush on wanted you for a long time. You get excited about it, but you know what? It might not be the right situation for you. You don't know. So I really don't necessarily think about it as much as people think I do. I mean, Chicago is my home city. I love Chicago. But you know what? My mind and my heart, you know, is here in Miami. You know, all the cards is in Miami. And it's their game to lose more so than anything. So I appreciate it. I appreciate that, you know, the organizations want me to be a part of them. But right now, you know, the Miami's in the driver's seat.
Now, I'll tell you what, that whole thing about the finding out the girl actually liked you, I don't know, I can't relate
Green,
to that.
Green, I was going to say, Dwayne, I'll explain that to Green in the break, what it was like for girls to want
to. That never happened to me.
They're all imaginary.
It's a tragedy.
Sure.
Anyway, it's always fun talking basketball and more with you. Dwayne, congratulations on a terrific year. Best of luck going into the playoffs and whatever it is this summer brings. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Dwayne.
Thank you, guys. As always, it was great.
There's the great Dwayne Wade with us.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
Let's bring in the one and only Mel Kiper Jr. on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Mel, let's start with this. If you were in that position, I know you have Jimmy Clausen rated slightly ahead of Sam Bradford. So what do you make of the possibility of the Rams possibly trading out and the Browns possibly trading up?
Greeny, I think it would be a great move. I'd applaud that. I mean, if you move down and you still get Jimmy Clausen, which I say you still get, is not guaranteed. I mean, you're still moving down to that seventh spot. But if Seattle, say at six, passes on Clausen, now they're not going to probably know at that particular point they're going to get him at 14. I do believe Seattle still has an interest in Jimmy Clausen, despite having Charlie Whitehurst. So to me, and hey, Matt Cassel, they're only committed to in Kansas City for one more year. And who was the offensive coordinator at Kansas City? Charlie Weiss. I made a comment yesterday that Jimmy Clausen will be the only quarterback in NFL history to come in and right away the day he steps in that building know more about the offense than every other offensive player on that team. So, but if they move to seven and still got Jimmy Clausen, that would be a real good move, I think, for Billy Devaney and company.
What are the deciding factors? You know, you can rate all you want. Todd can rate all he wants.
Yep.
Greeny and I can rate all I want. But when the team is rating, what has to go into it on where Clausen is to Bradford and how does the defensive tackle Sue fit into all the ratings as well?
Mike, I think it is true. They're the ones that have to make the call, and we can sit here and applaud or bash a pick. It doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, Donovan McNabb was booed. So it doesn't matter what the fans think either. You know, you don't have to go by what the general consensus is. You have to do what you think internally is the right thing to do. Bill Polian never cared. John Butler, the great John Butler, one of the best personnel men this league's ever seen, didn't care about that when he moved down, and moved down, and ended up getting Tomlinson and taking Breeze in the second round, passing on Michael Vick. So for me, it's all about what they want to do, a bold move. And I think in terms of your question about Bradford and Clausen, if you think they're pretty equal, then you move down. And if you think there's too many unknowns with Bradford to guarantee that kind of money at number one, you move down. You can still, I still like Bradford. Todd and I still really like Sam Bradford. But at number one, a year of relative inactivity coming out of a system that's not NFL-like, the last two times he was hit, he was down and out with that injury. So to me, if there are those concerns, then you move down. You get a Jimmy Clausen at seven. You pick up some additional choices. And this team has a lot of holes, obviously.
What about if you don't, you're not sure Bradford, and you can move down if you have a partner that wants to move up? Or what's your thought about just keeping the pick and liking Ndamukong Suh more and just taking him?
That right there would be, I think, difficult. I think if you're locked in, this is where you're kind of in this year, this particular 2010 year, not 1996, it's very difficult, Mike, to move down. And if you get somebody like Cleveland or somebody else that wants to move up, you know, don't go by the chart necessarily, because if you're locked in, you almost feel like at this point, after the pressure, after passing on Matt Ryan and passing on Mark Sanchez, the pressure to take a quarterback at one is going to be there. And the defensive tackle position, there is some risk there. I mean, we both like, Todd and I both like Sue and McCoy. He has McCoy one. I have Sue one. We have the other guy two. So we're not going to sit here and say right. We have questions about those two players, Mike, but the history of the draft in the top five, we put that list up on ESPN yesterday. It scares you a little bit, because it wasn't like we didn't like some of those guys when they came out. We liked some of those defensive tackles, and they did not pan out.
Mike and Mike Mel Kiper Jr. is with us 6 days to the NFL draft. What you say you have the questions about Sam Bradford. Are you, Mel Kiper, convinced Jimmy Clausen is a franchise quarterback?
You know, that's a word that is overstated, Mike. I think all you have to do is be good. If you're good, you're fine. That's why I made the point about Stafford and Sanchez and Flacco. And is Flacco right now? Yeah, he's considered a franchise quarterback. Is he going to be super elite threat of his career? We don't know. Just be good. Just don't be a major bust. You can't play at that position. There's been a number of quarterbacks that went high in the first round. Just flat out just can't get it done. And you don't want that. You want somebody who's a good quarterback and maybe develops into excellent, but at least be good. And if you think Jimmy Clausen or Sam Bradford could be, then I do believe they can, then you can take them. If the Bradford went number one, I'm not going to sit there and criticize that pick. There's nothing wrong with that. I've been fifth on the board. I like Sam Bradford. But if there's enough questions about making him the number one pick overall, and you get an offer to move down and you're the St. Louis Rams, and remember, they have talked about not having him signed by the draft anyway. If they were locked into Sam Bradford, don't you think that you say, hey, forget about all this other stuff. Forget about Clausen's pro day. I know due diligence is fine, but the only head coach at that workout was Spagnuolo. Billy Devaney has always through this process has said, hey, he likes Jimmy Clausen. So we'll see. But the bottom line is, it's going to be a lot of intrigue surrounding that Notre Dame quarterback, Jimmy Clausen, as to where he lands.
There always seems to be. Mel, can you hang on a minute? I have more I want to do with you. I need to take a break. Hang on a minute. We'll put Mel on hold. We will come back because there may be a name that's being left out of all of this, and that's a mistake. And if there is, Mel would know it. He'll tell you what it is next. Mike and Mike in the Morning.
ESPN Radio.
Mel continues with us here on Mike and Mike. Mel, all this talk about the possibility of someone like the Browns trading up to get Sam Bradford. We know about Bradford. We know about Jimmy Clausen. There may be a name in all of this that you can tell us, and that is, who are the other quarterbacks that you think could grade high enough that there will be teams out there thinking about this guy, second round, third round, or whenever, and saying, I don't have to take the quarterback up near the top because I can take this guy and feel good about it?
The only one, Gritty, would be Colt McCoy. And I think Colt McCoy, and I went back this morning before the show and read my write-up on Drew Brees. And Drew Brees' write-up is very similar to Colt McCoy's. Jake Plummer's write-up was very similar in there. So there's similarities between all three of those guys. And obviously Brees better than Plummer. Plummer still had a nice career with the Denver Broncos. So I think Colt McCoy, if you're talking about the first pick in the second round to St. Louis, the 38th pick overall, which is the Cleveland Browns, that would be something would have to make an awful lot of sense at that point. He's 28 on the big board right now. So I think he's worthy of being. He's in the same exact spot Drew Brees was just about when he came out. McCoy sits right in that same area. So he's the only one. If you want another guy who's interesting that some people are becoming enamored with as we move through the process, John Skelton, a quarterback out of Fordham. Big kid, 6'5 and a quarter, 245 pounds, good athlete. Needs some work, obviously, in transitioning from a lower level of competition. But in round four, a lot of people think Skelton could be an interesting guy. And there's a lot of mixed opinion on Dan LeFevre at Central Michigan. But the people that like him really like him. They think he's a second rounder.
That was a guy for me that I watched play, and I thought, you know what, this guy could be a sleeper to me. What's your thought on him? He doesn't sound like you're overly sold on him.
I like him. Todd does, and I do. So I'm not sold on him, Mike, to say he's definitely going to be a very good starting quarterback. He needs some things to work on. He's not super instinctive in the pocket, but I think his arm strength is certainly more than good enough. His accuracy isn't Chad Pennington-like, but it's okay, and he has that cerebral approach. He's very into football, loves to study the game, and I saw some comparisons to Pennington when you watched him do his damage at Central Michigan. So I think he's a guy that, and again, needs some coaching, needs some work, and needs some time to transition to the NFL. But in 2 or 3 years, as a second-round pick, if he's off the radar for a while, could be interesting.
Ndamukong Suh is number one on your big board, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So he's number one on your board, so that's your best can't-miss for this draft. Going over the draft you've covered and other number one guys you've had on your board, Where does he rank as far as potential going into the NFL?
Mike, he plays hard, and he's an incredible bull rusher. He needs a little bit of work from the technique standpoint in terms of the pro level. But, yes, McCoy as well is right there, number two. And, I stuck with Sue because I had been on Sue and really had him number one since early October. The production that he had at Nebraska week in and week out was off the charts. He's a great kid. I think the risk factor is minimal for McCoy and Sue, but they'll have to beat the odds, guys. And I think I remember when Manning, Rivers, and Roethlisberger came in, everybody said one of those three is going to be a bust. History tells us one of those three and maybe two of those three is going to be a bust. Well, none of the three were. And I think certainly these two, everybody's saying at least one of these two is going to be a major bust. Well, history can be proven wrong when you think it's pretty obvious. The personnel evaluations always is a humbling business.
Mel Kiper with us. Mel, I don't know if you've heard it, but we've had McShay in the studio the last few days doing mock McShay.
Right.
Where we make fun of him at the same time as asking questions. Every single one of them includes something about you. For example, hey, McShay, does Mel still have you traveling in the overhead baggage compartment of the airplanes when you go look at players? So we've had a lot of fun with that. Enjoy it, Mel. We'll talk to you after
you
the weekend.
You got it,
thanks,
guys.
Mel.
Take care, man.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
Bring in our baseball buddy, Buster Olney, who joins us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Good morning, Buster.
Good morning. Golic, step aside. There's going to be a nerd fight between Greeny and I, and it's going to get ugly.
Yeah, Buster's got – he's mad at me for something.
A nerd fight, nerd alert. Go ahead, Buster.
Okay, Greeny, tell us what Jorge Cantu did yesterday.
He drove in another run. It's his 10th consecutive game this year with an RBI. He has 10 RBIs, or maybe more than that, in 10 games. But he has at least one in every game this year.
No, you're wrong. He has 10 consecutive games with RBI, okay? He has 10 consecutive games with RBI. There are no RBIs. It's RBI, okay?
We wrote about this in our book, in Mike and Mike's Rules for Sports and Life. This is one of the things that if I become the commissioner, I have a 12-point plan of the things I will eliminate. And one of them is these highfalutin sportscasters like Buster Olney who feel the need to change the way baseball has been discussed for the last 100 years. Buster, it is RBIs. RBI is a word unto itself. The record for RBIs in a season is 100 and whatever it is, Hack Wilson. The point is an RBI is singular and RBIs are plural.
It's very sad that you continue to speak incorrectly, Greeny. Now, here's the deal about Jorge Cantu. Great. You know, at a time when a lot of players, when they take their at-bats, where they're focusing on, making sure that they don't swing at pitches out of the strike zone, Jorge Cantu has kind of an old-school approach. And I talked to him about this last year, where his feeling is when he comes up to bat, he wants to do what he can to drive in a run. He told me this last year. So if there's a runner at second base, his whole thing is, I need to do what I can do to get that guy in from second base. If he's batting with nobody on base, he's looking for a pitch to drive. And we're seeing that in his approach this year. Now, it's an incredible record that he started the season with. The record coming into this year, of course, had been 8. And you wonder if it can continue past today, because today he faces Roy Halladay, the Phillies.
Mike and Buster only. That'll be an interesting matchup. I want to talk about another Roy. On the flight down here, Buster, I was reading Jason Stark's rumblings and grumblings, on ESPN.com. And with the horrendous start the Houston Astros have gotten off to, they finally won yesterday, but they certainly don't look like they're a team that's going to be in contention by the time we get to May. The question is, will Roy Oswalt possibly be traded? And while he has a no-trade clause in his contract, he has expressed a willingness to possibly go someplace if it is one of the places he's interested in going. What do you think the chances are, Buster, that we will see Roy Oswalt traded before the deadline this year?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they fall out of it, that it would actually be discussed. But keep in mind, Roy is not the same pitcher that he was, say, 3 years ago. He's had some physical problems, some back issues. He makes a lot of money compared to what we've seen in salaries that have been paid in recent years, where some of those numbers have come down. And I just kind of wonder if the Astros, if they were to try to trade him, they'd have to almost give him away because of how much money he's going to make, or trade him at a discount. He had a ERA over 4 last year, and you wonder if a team would be willing to give the Astros enough to make a trade happen. And we know that Trey McClain, the Houston owner, he loves his star players. That's why he kept Craig Biggio around You know, he loves Lance Berkman. He loves Roy Oswalt. You guys remember a few years ago when he gave him that bulldozer to reward him after the Astros had a great season. And I just don't think he's just going to put him on a platter for some other team, and that's probably what they would have to do because of his contract and because of his physical condition.
Buster only joining us. I finally get to jump into the fray after Greeny and Buster's slap and tickle fight that went on. Hope you two kids are done with that. Already, what, we got 8-9 games into the season? We have our fire the manager rumblings already? What is going on?
Well, and that's down in Baltimore, where in talk radio down there, there's a lot of conversation. Should Dave Tremblay be fired? Orioles fans are really angry. You know, I mean, in the big picture, it's not fair because the Orioles, while the organization's getting better, they're not ready to contend in the American League East. And whoever made the schedule in the American League did Dave Tremblay no favors. Six of their first nine games were against the Tampa Bay Rays. And as we guys have talked about, they're one of the best teams in baseball. They're 1-9 now, and that's not making the fans very happy. Well, starting on April 23rd, they play 12 straight games against the Red Sox and Yankees. And, you know, the one good thing that's going for Dave in this situation is that Annie McPhail, the general manager of the Orioles, is a loyal guy. But you do wonder if at some point, if they continue to lose, if they're basically just going to have to throw some meat to the wolves. And the wolves are out among Orioles fans.
And quickly, Buster, a lot of guys here, we are almost the second week of the season. A lot of guys off to great starts, including Nelson Cruz here in Texas.
Yeah.
Robinson Cano off to a great start with the Yankees. Albert Pujols, of course, off to a legendary start. Francisco Liriano pitching well for Minnesota. Give me the one you think is most significant here at the start of the year.
I'll give you the bookend. Robinson Cano of the Yankees last night. It's a great story because on Jackie Robinson Day, remember, Robinson Cano was named for Jackie Robinson. He wears number 24. It's 42 reversed. Well, this year, since he got moved to the number 5 spot in the Yankee lineup, he's been looking to do damage when he gets ahead in the count. Last night, he hits 2 homers, 3 RBI. And after he got back to the dugout, Mark Teixeira asked him, he said, who are you named for? And he said, Jackie Robinson. And Teixeira said to him, well, that makes sense. This is your day.
Well done. Buster Olney, despite his inability to apply syntax to Major League Baseball, is one of our favorites. Thank you, Robert.
See you guys.